Thank you, Yvette. This morning's speaker, I met a couple years ago, but I feel like I've known her for a long, long time. And I'd seen her at a few meetings, and I happened to be looking for a sponsor at that time. And the thing that struck me the most about Norma Jean is that, unlike my hair color, she's not fake. She's a for real person. She's down to earth. She tells you how it is and how she feels, even when that may not be a happy message. She's not afraid to say that every day is an array of sunshine, but she knows her big book and she knows where to find the answers. And we spent her anniversary together this week. We were going to go out to dinner to celebrate, but instead she called and said there was a change of plan. We had a 12-step call. And that says everything about Norma Jean. Our speaker today, my sponsor, Norma Jean.
Hi, everybody. I'm Norma Jean, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's through God's grace and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous I'm sober this morning, and I am very grateful. I'm a member of the Strange Camels group of Alcoholics Anonymous from Slidell. I will try to share with you this morning what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. The best of my ability and the best that I can recall. Because I forget very easily. If God is not with us this morning, I feel sorry for you. Or for me, one of the two. I grew up in Houma, Louisiana. I have two sets of parents. I thought that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought that I was very unique and different because I was too young to be an alcoholic, you know. And next it was that I didn't think that anybody had two sets of parents. My mother and father gave me to my mother's sister when I was 6 weeks old to be raised. And I was raised the only child, and I was very rebellious child. I started drinking at the age of 13. I started jumping windows at the age of 13. I started doing all those things. I started taking drugs. I talk about drugs because that is part of my story, and it's the only way I can tell you about me. I have two best friends that was when I was growing up. And we did all our stuff together, and we ran around, and we drank, and we fought. And if you ask Norma Jean to do something, I'd do it. You know, you dare me to do anything, I would do it. If you picked on my friend, then I'd beat you up. That's how I lived life until I got sober, you know. And even after I got sober, I punched a man in the mouth at a year sober. You know, we're not well when we get here. I always felt like the alcohol made me feel pretty. It made me feel tall because I was short. You know, it made me do all the things that I couldn't do sober. I'd never wanted to be sober. I always wanted to drink. I drank to get drunk, you know. I loved what alcohol did for me, especially the combination that I had. You know, usually when people take Valiums, they fall asleep. Well, I took Valiums and drank Jack Daniels, and I was crazy. You know, I was like a rooster. You know, I would just jump on you anytime. I was a blackout drinker from get-go. I thought everybody drank the way I drank. I really did. I never thought that I had a problem with alcohol. I thought everybody else was my problem. If they would just leave me alone, I would be fine. You know, and I went through my life thinking that everybody had it out for me. You know, the world owed me something. My mother and father that raised me, they were giving people. They gave me everything materialistically in life. I never was deprived of anything. You know, I got things on a silver platter. I was fortunate. And then if they didn't give me what I wanted, then I'd go to the other set of parents. And then they would give it to me. So I learned to manipulate very young. You see, I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it, and I got it. And most of my life, that's what I did. And I used and I abused people when I threw them away. I didn't know that I was this kind of person. You know, I would black out, and I never would remember what I did the night before. You know, early on, I ran away when I was 16 years old. And I ran away, and I went behind a mausoleum. And, you know, my friend would come and give me Snickers bars. I'll never forget that. I was scared to death. But I wasn't about to show her that I was scared. I was a very angry drunk, a very violent drunk from get-go. You see, what was wrong with me that my parents gave me away? You know, there was something wrong with me, I thought. You know, it wasn't a clue that I thought, well, maybe they couldn't raise me because they had three other children in diapers. I never thought like that. I just thought that, you know, they just didn't want me, and there was something wrong with me. I went on, and I ran away, and I lived with my sister, and I graduated from high school, and I thought that was a big deal. You see, no one in my family ever graduated from high school, so it was a big deal for me. I played sports. I loved volleyball, and I was good. You know, my mother told me, my stepmother always told me, that I always finish what I started. Well, you know, I never finished drinking, I thought. You know, I don't know. I went to high school, and I was very arrogant. I was very mean. I only had those two friends. People didn't like me because I always thought that I was better than them, you know, and I always showed it. I was a very snobbish person, and I was no better than them. I found that out in Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, it took what it took to get me to AA. I lived with my sister and my stepmother's daughter, and I ran away, and I lived there because I didn't want to live at home, because, you see, that's all I wanted to do was party. That's the only thing I wanted to do. That's what I thought life was just a big party. I never had any responsibility because my mother took care of all my responsibilities, even when I was an adult. You know, I just thought it was a good idea that I didn't have to take care of anything. She took care of it. And she always took up for me. People talk bad about me. She took up for me. Of course, she was a very prideful person, and she was a perfectionist. And, you know, I kind of felt like Cinderella, you know, because she always had me cleaning. You know, it was like I had to take the wax off the floor, and I had to scrub the baseboards with toothbrushes, and it was never right, you know. And she always slapped me around when it wasn't right. I was physically and mentally and sexually abused for a long time. And I never let anybody know because I was too ashamed. I say this morning so that maybe I can help somebody else. I stayed with my sister, and my sister introduced me to some little black mollies, and I found out that if I took those little black mollies, I can drink a long time. And that's what I did for a long time. I took those black mollies and I drank. And the only requirement for that, though, was that I had to clean her house. So that wasn't a big deal. I just cleaned the house, and then I'd go out, and I'd be gone for days. I always thought I was a periodic alcoholic. I always thought I was a binge drinker. I found out later on in Alcoholics Anonymous that I drank almost every day before I got here. You know, I blacked out for 30 days. I moved in, and I partied a whole lot, and I decided that I needed to go live with my real mother and father, because I never had. And you know, alcoholism is a progressive illness, and my disease was progressing. It was progressing really fast. I moved in with my mother and father, and I had brothers. And I like to describe my brothers, because, and I hope I don't offend anybody. because this is my store and it's my brother, so I can say what I want. You know, my brothers were, for to me, hoodlum brothers, and I wanted to be just like them. You know, they wore chains on their hips, and they wore Harley Davidson T-shirts, and they were bad, and they never had a Harley. And and I wanted to be just like them. And they taught me some things about the street. You see, I never lived with my brothers and grew up with my brothers and sisters. And they really didn't like me very much because they thought, you know, she has everything in life and we have nothing. And they ran the street. And my real father is a shrimper and he goes out on the boats and my mother raised those children alone. And I can remember my brothers hitchhiking to come to visit me. You know, I can remember when I was young, when they come to visit me at my aunt's house, I couldn't play with them because my mother would never let me play with them. You see, she hid me from my brothers and sisters because she said they were too bad, you know. And so I wanted to be just like my brothers. And one night, I shared this because this is what I had become in drinking and using drugs. And I never wanted to become the kind of person that I had become. That night, I took a couple of Valiums and I started drinking. And my brothers had this chain, and it was about this long. And they had a blue handle on it, and they called it Old Blue. And they said, here's this chain, and you're going to fight this guy tonight. And if you don't fight him, we're going to beat you. So I had no choice, and that's what I did. And I could remember, you know, I started off, I was a little sober, you know, I wasn't that drunk yet. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was really drinking, and I started fighting this guy, and I could remember him punching me in the face. And I could remember him just really getting the best of me, and my brothers were standing there looking at me, and they said, what'd you have that chain for? You see, and they were teaching me how to be bad. They were teaching me how to be tough. And I whipped out the chain, and I started beating the guy with the chain. And the guy ran from me, and he ran about a block down the road. I took off after him, and I started beating him with the chain. I woke up the next morning, and like I always do, it was about noon. You know, God has a sense of humor. He puts me in the morning to talk. You know, I am not a morning person. I never will be a morning person. You know, I am not standing here this morning. Somebody else is, in my mind. But I woke up that evening, and I asked them where the guy was. And they said, well, he's upstairs, he's hiding. And I said, he's hiding? Why is he hiding? Because, you see, I didn't remember what I had done. And they had to tell me. And when he came down the stairs, I said, So go get him, you know. And when he came down the stairs, I said, what's wrong with you? Why are you hiding? And he says, you don't remember, you know. And I'm sure his ego was hurt. But the guy was hurt. And he lifted his shirt up, and he had welts all over his back. And he said, this is what you had done to me. And I didn't know what I had done to him. I had become an animal. I had become something that I didn't want to become. I had hurt somebody else that I didn't know that I had hurt him. So what I did, I just took another Valium and drank some more Jack Daniels. That's what I did. I never wanted to feel anything. I never felt anything for a long, long time. You know, my sponsor tells me today that sometimes it's hard for me to feel. And it is, because I never got to be a child. I always got to be something else. I never was my. I never was me. I did that in about, I guess, 18 years old. I met this guy and I got married. And the only reason I got married was because I wanted to get out of my mother's house. Of course, you know, I went from house to house to house. They call that pillar to post. You know, I had. What came out of that marriage was two beautiful children. I didn't always have my children. I started running around in the bars. I'm a barroom alcoholic. I love to drink in the bars. I loved everything about the ballrooms. I loved the men. I loved the music. I loved pool. I loved the lights. I loved the fact that if you don't notice me, I'll get on the bar. Then you'll notice me. I was very self-centered. I didn't even know it. You know, I absolutely loved it. My children were with my mother, my stepmother, most of the time. Because, you see, I couldn't take care of them, you know. And I used up my stepmother a whole lot for taking care of my children and taking care of my responsibilities. She enabled me. She almost enabled me enough that I almost died because she took up for me so much. You know, I hated my stepmother. I really did. You see, because I thought she was so mean. And I hated her until 5 years before she died. And I was sober, thank God. I got a divorce after 4 years of being married to this man, my children's father. And he caught me in the bar with another man. I was never a faithful wife. I didn't know how to be. You see, I always had fun. I thought that was fun. I never had enough of nothing. You know, I never had enough drinking. I never had enough men. I never had enough of nothing. You know, and I took advantage of that when I was drinking. And I never noticed all the things I did. You know, if you asked me still today, Norma Jean, do you know any actors or actresses or anything? I say, no, I don't know anything. Because, you see, that's all I did was drink in the bars and fight. We wiped out a lot of bars when I was drinking. And, you know, my real father is an alcoholic, I suppose. He been drinking since he was young, and he stopped drinking about 5 years ago. And that's a miracle to me. He doesn't go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but he doesn't drink. And I thought I was going to never, I said to myself, I was never going to be like my father. Never. I am just like my father. I didn't want to be that way. Because, you see, I saw when my father drank and how he beat my brothers. I saw him beat them with a broomstick. And I said I was never going to be that mean, and I was never going to do the things he did. And I did the things he did, and I did more. And I was not proud of that. I was ashamed. I was full of guilt and remorse. I had lost all dignity for myself, all pride, all everything about me was gone. I was everything that you wanted me to be, you know, and I didn't know who I was. I had no clue. After I got a divorce from my husband, my husband took the kids away from me. The judge took them and said I was an unfit mother. And I dared them do that to me. I dared them take away my kids. It's the only thing I had. But yet I had neglected them, and I never noticed. Because alcohol was the most important thing in my life. Even when I wasn't drinking, alcohol was important. I always had to find a sitter. I always had to find somebody to watch the kids. I put alcohol in front of my kids, in front of anybody. I didn't care. I had gotten to the point that I didn't care at all about nobody. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't like men and I didn't like women. I didn't like myself. I didn't like nothing. You know, I didn't know where I was. I didn't believe I had a problem. And I thought, if you would just leave me alone, my life would be fine. You know, if you would just do what I tell you to do, everything would be great. I thought I was in control of everything. You know, I played God for a long, long time. I met this guy that had the coke that I wanted, so I went with him, and I lived with him for 4 years. At the end of those 4 years, you know, that's all we did together was drink and fight. You see, because, you see, I drank and took these Valiums, and I was like a rooster. So, you know, he looked at somebody else funny, I'd punch him in the mouth. And that's how I lived my last years of drinking. And I can always remember that I never had enough. You know, this guy, we lived in the country in Abbeville. It's called Esther, Louisiana. And it was in the country, and it was just rice fields. And I had nowhere to go. I tried riding a horse. Well, I fell off the horse because I was drunk. And I wanted, it was like 8 miles from town, and I always wanted to go back to the bar. He seemed to be drunk and had enough. I never had enough. So I'd jump out of the truck, and I'd hitchhike back to town. And to tell you about my attitude was, when I caught a ride at the end of the highway, old man would pick me up, and I'd say, why the hell didn't you pick me up way back there? I had to walk so damn far. You know, and I was never grateful for anything. I had an attitude, you know. It was like I should have been grateful that they picked me up. I had a ride to go back to the bar. I never was. You know, I just wanted to be there. I was very demanding. I was very arrogant. I was, and sometimes I am today. You know, I like to always thought, I always said that I was so phony, you know, before I came to AA, because my brothers made me queen of the world. You see, because I can do anything I wanted to you, and I never paid the consequences, ever. And somebody else paid it for me all the time until I got to AA. I lived with this guy, and his mother put him in a treatment center one day. And 30 days he was gone, 30 days I drank. He came home from the treatment center and he said, here's the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe you can find yourself in there. And I thought, right. I looked in the book and I started reading it, and there's a page in there and it talks about, we do not like to pronounce any individual alcoholic. Go out to the nearest bar room and try some controlled drinking. And I stopped. I stopped reading it and I said, that's what I need to do. I need to go out and try some controlled drinking. I was glad he let me read the book, you know. And so I went out, and I set out to control my drinking. Because, you see, I never tried to stop drinking. I didn't want to stop drinking. Alcohol was always the solution for me. I was always drinking, always had chemicals in my body. I never once wanted to be sober. So I never thought about controlling my drinking. So I went out, and I went to visit my parents in Texas. They lived in Texas at the time. And and I said, I'm going to take two Valiums, and I'm going to go. And in Texas, you know, you can't buy just a drink. By that time, I was drinking White Russians. And so I had to go buy the vodka, the Kahlua, and the milk, and go to the bar and buy setups. So I went to any length to drink. Anyway, so I went in the bar, I started drinking, and by the time I realized it, I never noticed, but I was in the bar, and I was dancing on the stage, and I didn't have any clothes on. You know, that was disgusting to me, but that wasn't the disgusting part. You see, I always thought in my sobriety that I had clothes on, and I never knew that my father and my brothers were there watching me. And I thought, really, I really blew it. You know, I didn't find out that I didn't have clothes on until I was 11 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and that was my last drunk. But I didn't know, I loved it. I love you throwing money. Watching me and throwing me money, I loved it. I was so self-centered. You know, I was the center of the universe, and I loved it. And I didn't realize that until after I came here. I didn't realize how sick I had become. I didn't realize none of those things until I got to AA. And when I got to AA, I didn't even believe I was an alcoholic. I thought I didn't have a problem with alcohol. I was in such denial. The denial of alcoholism, of my disease, was just so great for me. You know, I couldn't get to step one, you know, and I was like, you know, they had a lady, and she gave me the book, and she said, Norma Jean, just look in here. It doesn't say you have to accept that you're an alcoholic. Just admit it, you know. That's all you have to do is admit it and go on and with the rest of the steps. And, you know, I was looking around for it. I came into AA, and I was it was in Abbeville, Louisiana, and it was a little small little house, gray house, and I thought it was the only AA meeting in the world. I really did. I never knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't never wanted to know about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, prior to that, I have a brother that's the same brother that taught me how to fight is in the penitentiary. And he's in the penitentiary for life because he killed someone under the influence of alcohol and drugs. There is no difference between me and my brother. None at all. The only difference is that I'm sober today. And he's going to spend the rest of his life in the penitentiary for doing something in a blackout. See, I could have been him. And I realized that I could have been him. I came into AA and you treated me. You directed me. You took my hands and you showed me the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You didn't tell me I was an alcoholic. I had to find out for myself that I was an alcoholic. About 2 months into being sober, I went to meetings every day. They told me to get a sponsor, and I did. And I can remember the only thing I ever heard in that meeting that I went to was that to keep coming back. You know, they never wanted me to come back in the bars. They kicked me out a lot of bars, and I thought, these people want me back. I was arrogant. I was loud. I didn't shut up, even though they told me to shut up. They said, Norma Jean, you need to listen and learn. And I thought I was listening, but I was talking. I found out I really can talk and listen. You know, I sponsor people, and me and my sponsees, we talk all the time, and we listen to each other, you know, and I can hear just as good. that guy that I lived with for 4 years, I caught him at somebody's house at 2 in the morning. I think we call that 13 stepping in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was, it was a moment of clarity for me that night. I was sober. I was angry. And I wanted to drink and I wanted to die. You know, I used to always pray to God that he'd get me out of my jams. And that night, I didn't bother praying. I just wanted to go in there and beat the hell out of them. That's what I wanted to do. And I did. I went to that house and I got up there, and I had my two kids with me. You see, prior to that, my husband brought my two kids back, and he said he couldn't take care of them. And they were 2 and 3 years old. And I was still drinking before then, you know, and it was about a year prior. And I didn't know what to do with them, you know. And I know today that it was through God's grace that he gave me my children back. Because, you see, I was going crazy without my children. I drank more than ever when my children were gone. You see, because I wasn't good at anything. You know, I was a disgusting mother, and I never wanted to admit that. I admitted that when I was about 2 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, that, you know, my sister came and took the kids away, and I resented the hell out of her. I dare her come take my kids. And when I realized, when I came to, you know, I always came to, you know, and when I came to realize that, my God, I had treated those children so badly that my mother never did that to me. You know, I had left those children in dirty diapers for days. I had left those children with lice in their hair because, you see, alcohol was more important, and I never knew it. I never knew that I was doing those things. I can't tell you that if I knew, if I would have stopped, because I don't think I could have. Because I didn't want to. I beat that guy up, and I tried to get in that house to get to her. And that night, my kids were sleeping in that truck, and I had nowhere to go. I had no gas in the truck. I had no money in my pocket, and I had two little children. And I was standing there beating these kids, this guy up. And my children came out the truck. I thought they were sleeping, and they said, Mama, please don't kill them. And you see, that was the first time that I ever saw myself so angry. It was the first time that I seen me beat somebody, the scene who I really was. I was an angry, angry drunk. and I couldn't stop what I was doing. I didn't have the power to stop me from being so angry. And that night, I went home to that trailer, and I knelt down, and I said the only prayer that I ever thought of to say. And I said, whoever, whatever's out there, please help me, because I'm going to go crazy. And there's nothing that happened. I thought I would have a lightning bolt because, you know, I was going to meetings for 2 months, you know. I thought, well, like, really, God's going to give me a revelation here, you know. And I didn't have a burning bush. I didn't have a lightning bolt. I didn't have anything. I went to sleep the next morning. I called that sponsor. You see, that's what's important when we come here, to get a sponsor. And I called her up, and she came over, and she said, you know, Norma Jean, if you stay here, you may not stay sober. You may have, do you have anywhere to go? At that point, I had nowhere to go. You see, my stepfather had told me a year prior that to never call him again, that I was disgusting. He didn't want to have anything to do with me. Don't call and bother me and your mother again. And I thought, well, maybe he'll come get me. Maybe he'll do that. And that's what I did. And she came over, and she gave me 10 things to do, and she said, you know, call your dad and see if he's going to come get you. And the first thing you do when you get that, you go up to those people in AA. Go to a meeting and say, I'm Norma Jean, I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. You see, because I never needed nobody's help. I needed help. And that's what I had to say. And that was the only thing I remember on the list, because it was the top of the list, you know. It was to humble myself enough to say that I need help. And I went to, and I moved to Houma. And there I go. I moved everywhere, pillar to post, you know. Even in sobriety, that's what I did. You know, so I moved to Houma, and of course I didn't have a job. I didn't even know how to work. I thought the idea was, for men, was that they had to take care of me every which way. You know, emotionally, financially, spiritually. They were my God. That was their job, was to take care of me. And I didn't know how to work. And so I had to get on welfare and food stamps, because I didn't have no ways of supporting my children. And of course, I met a man, of course. And then I was about 3 months over, and then I moved to Texas. You know, I thought, well, it's a good idea. I always get this urge in me that I'm going to get up and move, because it's going to be different somewhere else. So I moved to Texas. Those people in AA in Texas are rough. They really are. They'll tell you like it is. You know, they told me, shut up, sit down. I had nothing to say. You know, and here I am. I'm thinking, I know everything, right? They say, you don't know a damn thing about being sober, you know, so you need to be quiet and listen. Then I go in and talk about Valiums, and they didn't want to hear that either. They said, this is AA. They have a program for that if you want to go, you know. I said, okay, you know. And then they humiliate you in the meeting. You know, that wasn't good for my ego, not at all, you know. And I did, and I went to NA for a little while, you know, and I came back, and I found recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. This has given me my life. I had no life when I got here. I existed when I got here. I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. I got what I wanted when I wanted it. Always did. Always happened. I moved to Texas, and I got a sponsor, and I started working some steps. And one of the things is that the man was treating me the same way, that is, when I was drinking. And my sponsor said, you know, you live in the same way. What are you going to do? You need to take some action, you know. Well, good. I called the cops on him. You know, at least I didn't beat him up, you know, because I used to just beat him up. And I did punch him in the mouth, and I was a year sober. And, I couldn't believe that I had done that. I was like, I try so hard to keep my hands to myself. You know, I really did. You know, and I want to say, you know, when I drank and I fought, I got beat up. You know, I wanted to tell you in AA that I never got beat up. You know, but that was just not true. I always got beat up, but I was never scared of anybody. And I didn't care if you was 10 foot tall. I didn't care if you were a man, a woman. I was not scared. But, you know, I was really scared inside. And I was, because I was so angry. And I never knew that I covered up that fear with all that anger. You see, the anger was the only emotion I ever knew. That's all I knew how to do was strike back at you. Because I didn't know no other solution. That and drinking. And that's what made me feel good. It made me feel whole. It made me feel like somebody. You know, my aunt always told me that I was not going to be nothing. She said, you're going to end up nothing. And I always thought that. I stayed in Texas for a little while, and I decided I met another man after I kicked this one out. And, they told me when I came to AA's, they don't have no relationships in a year. Well, I had three, you know, and I really, it's only through God's grace that I didn't get drunk. I don't know why I didn't get drunk. You see, I believe that my desire to not live the way I used to live was so great. I did not want to live that way anymore. You see, because I've seen that y'all had a different life that I had never known, you know, and I wanted it. But I wouldn't tell you that I wanted it. I don't tell you, I don't want nothing you have. You know, but I really did inside. I really wanted what you had. But I wasn't going to tell you because I was too much of it. Had this big ego, you know, couldn't walk through the door. I met this guy and I moved back to Houma. I thought it was going to be different. And all this time, my kids are coming with me, you know, and they're with me and we're going to AA, and people in AA are taking care of my kids. People in AA are reading to my kids. People in AA are taking them out of the meetings and talking to them. I thank you for raising my children. Because you see, I didn't know how to be a mother. You know, I still don't know how to be a mother. I love Alcoholics Anonymous for raising my kids. I always will. I moved to Houma and I went back to live in the same house that I grew up in. That was an experience. I moved out of there very quick because I didn't want to deal with the misery, you know, the pain that went there. I want to say this. It is not my mother and father's fault that I'm an alcoholic. It is I'm the one that picked up the drink of alcohol. It didn't matter what went on in my life when I was a child. I picked up the alcohol because, you see, I never wanted to face reality. Ever. I never wanted to feel never. I didn't feel anything in Alcoholics Anonymous for 5 years. I walk in the meetings and I never cried. I see other people cry. I see newcomers come in and cry, and I thought, I never cried. I wouldn't dare cry. I didn't want you to see me crying, you know? I'll never forget the day that I cried in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everybody in the meeting laughed, and they clapped, and I thought, why are they clapping, you know? And I thought it was so sad. And they said, because you're finally letting the walls down, you know? And I started to feel a little bit of something. And it was a great day for everybody else, but not me. Because, you see, I still didn't want to feel anything. I lived with this guy, and this guy is very special to me. I lived with him for 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was an alcoholic. He worked for my stepfather, and my stepfather owned a company in New Orleans, so we moved to New Orleans. I was fortunate. I had a lot of sponsors, and every sponsor I had has helped me through the steps of AA. I have been very, very fortunate in sponsors. They've always put me in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. They've always told me to get into service. They've always told me that I needed to show up. It didn't matter when. And I always showed up. I always did what I wanted to. I didn't want to do it. I always complained about what they told me to do, but I did it anyway. You know, and, you know, I like to say that I took the actions regardless if I liked them or not. You know, they told me when I came in and they had me mopping floors and picking up ashtrays. And I was like, how in the hell is that going to keep me sober? You know, and, you know, today I'm sober. You know, I still pick up ashtrays. You know, I still do some work. When I was 3 months sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to make coffee. I thought I would never get to make coffee. I always wanted to make coffee, but I didn't know how to make coffee because I never made coffee, you know? And I was excited to make coffee, you know? I make coffee all the time now. You know, my sponsees make a lot of coffee, too. They drink a lot. I moved to New Orleans, and by that time, I'm about 2 years sober in AA. I still don't have a job. I want to tell you about my job when I was drinking. I had a job once, and I worked in a bakery. And I was drunk on the job. And this person came in, you know, and I was going to give them they wanted to buy a cake. I said, okay. They loved the cake they saw. And I said, okay, you can have it. I never thought anything about it. Of course, I'm drunk. Well, they called back, and I sold them a styrofoam cake. $16 styrofoam cake. Well, you know I got fired. I'll never forget it. It was the only job I ever had. You know? And I messed it all up. But anyway, I didn't have a job, so I had to go to school to find a career and I didn't know what I wanted to do, you know, and so I went to business school and I became a secretary. I didn't finish that business school because I needed the money to support my children. And I was living with this guy, and he didn't make enough money, so I had to go to work. And I learned enough to be a secretary. Today I'm a secretary. You know, this lady in home always told me about, you know, when I came to AA, the group was my higher power. Because, you see, I knew about God, but, you know, I knew God was going to punish me because I'm a Catholic. And my mom always told me God was going to punish me because of all the things I did, you know. And so I didn't have a God. And this lady from home, and she told me, she said, you know, Norma Jean, if God's in me, God's in you. I'll never forget that day. Because if God was in her, then God had to be in me. And I had to start looking at the God in people. I had to start looking at the positive things in people. You see, because I was so negative when I got here. You know, I love to criticize you because there was nothing wrong with me, of course. I knew everything, you know. Today I know nothing. You know, I really don't. I don't know how I got from point A to point B. I really don't. You know, because I lose my thoughts and my memory of what happened. And God does this. I have no clue sometimes what I'm doing. God does it. You know, it's kind of like automatic pilot. I just do it. I do things in AA I don't want to do. I just do them because I'm told to do them. Because I don't know a damn thing about living sober. And people that have sobriety that come to Alcoholics Anonymous, that work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that have a sponsor and does the deal, knows how to live without taking a drink of alcohol. I don't know how to do that. I only know how to show up. You know, this guy I lived with, he committed suicide, and I found him. I was 5 years sober, and one day he came up to where I was working, and he told me he was moving back to Houston, and I got off of work early because I thought something was wrong, and I went to the apartment, and he had hung himself, and I found him. And I never forget that day. I was numb. I don't think I wanted to drink as much as I didn't want to face the fact that this is what he had done. He hung himself sober. I had my sponsor there, and she came over, and she said, Norma Jean, you don't have the power to kill anybody. And I'll never forget that. I don't have the power to do anything. I get the power from God, a God of my understanding that I found in this program that is loving, caring, forgiving, understanding, a God that I never thought I had. And I didn't drink that day, and I didn't kill myself, and I didn't do any of those things. People in Alcoholics Anonymous took me in their house, and they babied me, and they took care of me because I couldn't take care of me. I was numb. There were people in this program that criticized me and pointed fingers at me, and I didn't drink, and it was okay, and I didn't have the power. I went to Houston, and we buried this guy. You buried this guy. They passed baskets to bury him. Alcoholics Anonymous buried their own. I thank you for burying that man. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I went to Houston, and I had a spiritual experience that I thought it's a spiritual experience to me. I guess that's what you call it. And you see, I had did a lot of sick things to this man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very arrogant. I was very much in wanting to be in control. I thought that I was in control. I thought that I could make you do what I wanted you to do. And you see, I always controlled men, you know, every which way. In fact, when I came into AA, the first people I talked to was man, you know. And I had hurt him very much. And because I used him. You see, I used him for my sickness. You see, I thought because he went to a lower bottom than me, from a lower place than I came from, that if I was with him, then it made me look good. How sick is that? I had become so sick in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even know it. You see, 5 years in AA, I was walking around the rooms angry. And it didn't mean that I didn't practice the steps. It didn't mean that I didn't go to meetings. It didn't mean that I didn't have a sponsor. It didn't mean that I didn't go into service. It just meant that this I had never really dealt with that because I didn't want to. I wanted to avoid it, and I wanted to be in control, and I was sick. And I had went to make amends to this man in his coffin, and I believe he heard me. And something happened to me right then and there. I was shaking like a leaf, and my knees were shaking, and I thought I was going to fall, and they had these people pointing fingers at me. And it was a very rough situation, and God took me from that situation. He took me out of it. And when I got up from my knees, I felt free. And, you know, I wasn't free from him. I was free from me. I was free from that selfishness and that self-centeredness and that ego. And all that, at that time, at that particular time, God had set me apart from where I was. And I was so grateful. I can't explain to you the spiritual experience. I could only tell you that it felt wonderful. I always want to capture that feeling because it was something that I knew that God, that you couldn't give it to me. That God had given it to me, that God had made these things possible, and I didn't know how, but it was okay. I didn't have to know how. And I went back home, and I said, okay, I know what it is. God doesn't want me to be in a relationship. So he wants me to be single, you know. And I was crazy once more, and I surrendered to the fact that maybe I had to be alone. You know, I was sitting in that apartment that night, and I remember I was so angry. I dare him do this. And I punched the wall once again. 5 years sober, I'm punching the wall again. You know, they told me in Alcoholics Anonymous what to do with my anger. In fact, it tells you in the page. I don't know what page. I'm not good at quoting, but I know that it says, you know, we ask God to remove my anger. You know, thy will be done, not mine. And it's the resentment prayer. And I prayed that a whole lot. I met my present husband, you know, and it wasn't long after that. And I met Tom, and I was very vulnerable at the time, and I was very, I was scared to be in a relationship, really, because of what I had done to that other person. You know, I learned so much about these relationships, you know, that I had. I learned that I didn't have to be in control. I didn't have to take hostages. I didn't have to live the way I used to live when I was drinking. You know, this program is about change. It's about taking action. It's about doing something different. You know, and I always did something different, and I had to. And I like this guy. Well, his sponsor came up to me, and he told me, he says, you know, I want you to take Tom, and I want you to introduce him. I know you're going to those parents without partners dances, so, you know, take him, introduce him, be social. Oh, okay, I'll do that, you know. Tom never got to the parents without partners dances. And he was nice to me. And I always like to tell a little story that he has done for me. And I never thought that I could. And I still worked at the same place. And one day, it was my birthday, and Tom had a key to my apartment, and we were dating. And I walked into my apartment, and it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And there's balloons all over my apartment. And then there's roses on the table, and there's a Dobash cake. I think I'm saying it right. And there's a card. And I just want to cry. Because, you see, nobody ever did something nice for me. Never. You know, when I got sober, I didn't know how to feel anything, and I was great. And I didn't know what gratitude was. I didn't know anything. And I failed to say this in the beginning, but when I lived in Texas, I worked in a nursing home. And my sponsor had gotten me the job, and they had this baby. They had babies in this nursing home. They had children that couldn't take their mother or whatever, couldn't take care of them, and they were in this nursing home. And they had this baby named Charlie, and I'll never forget Charlie. See, Charlie, his mother was an alcoholic. His mother dropped him in an ice chest of water, and Charlie was never going to grow. And he was never gonna smile, and he was never gonna do anything. And it was my responsibility to take care of Charlie every morning. I took care of 17 patients. And every morning I walked into that nursing home, and I wanted Charlie to smile. I always wanted Charlie to smile. And Charlie never smiled, but something happened to me. Something happened to me inside that day. I had been complaining about everything in my life. I had been taking advantage of everything. And here was this baby that was never going to grow and never going to smile and never was going to have a life. And I learned gratitude for the first time in my life. And I was about 6 months sober then. And you know, from time to time, I forget about Charlie and I become ungrateful. And every time I think about Charlie, I become grateful. Because, you see, Charlie's still alive, and he's in that crib, and that's all he does is cry and wet. But I'm here, and I'm grateful, because I have a life that you've given me, that God has given me, that I've never known before. And I always think of Charlie. I walked into that room, that apartment, and I tell you, I was filled with joy and happiness that this person had did this something nice for me. And I didn't understand it, you know. And I went to my sponsor and I told her about it. And I said, you know what he did for me? And I told him the situation. And it was a beautiful day. And she said, you know, maybe Norma Jean, you started treating people the way you wanted to be treated. Maybe you stopped treating people like crap. So they're going to stop treating you like crap. And I had never noticed that something had happened in my life. A program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was so powerful, that is still powerful in my life, as long as I show up, as long as I do and take the actions necessary. I been through a lot. Tom told me he was going to buy me a house. He bought me a house. You know, Tom, I had to do something different, and I always jumped into these relationships, and I always lived with people, and that's not what I really wanted to do inside, but I did it anyway because I didn't know any other way to do it. And I said I had to do something different. So I dated Tom for 8 months. And then we got engaged. And I told Tom, I said, you know, Tom, if you plan on moving in with me, you're going to have to marry me. And Tom married me. And that was something different. And I felt good about it. You know, I love my life today, a life that you've given me that I've never known. Tom built me a house. You know, men always told me tales, and Tom was telling me, I thought he was telling me tales, but he didn't. He bought the house. And we built a house in Pearl River, where we're at, and we've been there for about 2 years. You know, and I always had problems with change. You know, we always resist change, and this is a good change, and I think it slowed me down a bit. I always had a home group. You know, I can stand up here and say that I am very proud that I have this home group I have today. If you would have asked me a year ago, I would have told you I didn't like the home group I have today, but I love the home group I have today because they really do care. People in Alcoholics Anonymous really do care. You see, but I have to get out of the way long enough to let them care. You know, I always have to turn it over. I get up in the morning and I ask God to direct my thinking and divorce it from selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking motives and dishonesty. And I get on my knees and I do that because, you see, this is what you taught me to do. I didn't know how to do that before. And I have that God that loves me today. My mother passed away when I was 9 years sober. And I went to the hospital because I couldn't accept her death. I was going to go crazy. I wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to drink. I just wanted to die. You see, because she was my enabler. And, you know, we went to the hospital, and they said that 5 years, she had this cancer 5 years prior, and I didn't know it. And I had made my amends to my mother 5 years prior. God gave me that relationship with my mother for 5 years, something you could have never given me. God gave it to me. And I thank God every day for that because, you see, in the beginning I told you I hated my mother. I really loved my mother. And I went to this treatment center for 2 days, and I just realized that I just had to work the steps, you know, and accept that she was not here physically. And everybody helped me through that. You see, AA's there for us all the time. And we just don't know it. And you hear from me. When I got through that, and, you know, I work for, it's really funny, from where I come from, I work for nuns today. I think my God really has a sense of humor. You know, Catholic nuns, I love those nuns. They have something I don't have. They have the calmness about them, something that I have to learn all over again, to be calm. There's nothing calm about me, folks. Everybody knows it. When I'm sad, you know it. You know, when I'm angry, you know it. When I'm happy, you know it. I don't hide anything. My life is an open book, and I love it. You know, when I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to close, is that my husband was diagnosed with a disease. And once again, I thought that something else was going to happen, and I got crazy again. I didn't have to go to the hospital this time, but I got crazy again. So, you know, I realized that things always happen. Situations always happen in life. But as long as I pick up the tools of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm able to get through that. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, but I can only see it when I get through it. And it's so wonderful. You know, and my husband lives today still. And we're going to have to live one day at a time with this disease that he has. You know, and it's through using and drinking. And, you know, my life is wonderful today. My children, I don't know what's going to happen with my children, and I love them. I love them so much. I've done everything that I could possibly do to be there for my children, and you were there for them. I love AA, and I so much thank the committee for asking me to be here. My life is wonderful. I love AA. I love you. Thank you for having me.